Hello, everyone. My name is David Smith, and this is the Armchair Commentary. On this week's episode, we are continuing with our theme of busts, except this time we're taken to the ice. Follow along with Steve and I as we take a trip down draft memory lane, where people were touted as the next great one and just weren't even close. If you'd like to follow us on social medias, you can find Steve at SteveSteele23 and myself at ArmchairCommon2 at ArmchairCommentary on Instagram and Twitter. And we would greatly appreciate it if you would do so. Please let us know if there is something that you are looking for in these episodes. We love to bring you the content that you're looking for. Lastly, if you can support this podcast, and we greatly appreciate it if you can, head over to patreon.com/armchaircommentary. Without further ado, here's Ride the Pine. So we're back again. I think we're going to stick with the bust for a little while. We had a lot of fun talking about football busts. So we are going to go to the ice, but before we get there, wanted to talk to you about some fun stuff going on. The NBA is still working its way through. We're in the conference finals now. The Celtics and Heat and Nuggets and Lakers.
Yep.
The Nuggets, I guess, are the kind of the surprise out of that. Although I guess the Heat technically
The Heat definitely are too. Yeah. That's not, yeah.
How do you feel about the four teams that are in there? Is there something you're looking? Are you looking for Celtics Lakers kind of classic NBA Finals, or are you looking for like more exciting teams to kind of come out of it? I mean, the Heat are exciting.
The Heat are going to go. The Heat are going to win. They're up 3-1 already as we're recording this, so they're probably going to go. I'm hoping personally. What I want is a Heat Denver Final. I think that would be really exciting. I've seen my fair share of LeBron James in the NBA Finals to know that I don't need it anymore. I'm sorry, Laker fans. But like LeBron's, what, 9 finals in the last 13 years? Like I'm good, guys. Like you know what I mean? Like yeah. Last year was a breath of fresh air because it was an NBA Finals without LeBron James. When was the last time he wasn't in the NBA Finals? Like 2000, other than last year, I think it was like 2010, I think. Yeah, 2010 and 2019 are the only years in the last decade LeBron hasn't been in the finals. So go Denver, go Miami. Huge Jimmy Butler guy. Obviously, I cheer for Jamal Murray. We've discussed this numerous times on here. And Jokic. Yep. The Denver Nuggets will still win the series. They're just going to need to get around some piss-poor officiating, but I believe in them.
I got to be honest. When the Heat won and moved on, I prefer them over the Celtics. If I'm like just thinking about the style of play that I enjoy watching more, the Celtics are a good team. And I like the Heat more. I kind of like what Tyler Hero brings. Dragic is a point guard. He shoots the ball. And I kind of hope the Nuggets won. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but I'm rooting for the Canadian kid. And that's basically it. You know, my basketball following is more limited to, my Raptors fandom and less about basketball as a whole, but I can appreciate a good series. And I'm hoping that the Heat kind of pull it out and that the Nuggets kind of go forward with it. So we'll see. I mean, are you still feeling that the quality of basketball is there?
Oh yeah. I think basketball is really high right now. The quality, they're playing great basketball. All four of those teams are playing elite level basketball, in my opinion.
Which is only good for the game, and it really, I think, enhances. I mean, it's better to parity is a great thing, in my opinion. But it also helps when you have teams that are just showing up to the finals, to the conference finals, and playing some like top tier stuff. These games aren't like, we're not talking about massive blowouts, are we? Like, I'm being completely honest. I haven't watched much since the Raptors were eliminated. I've been focusing more on Major League Baseball and NFL. But you know, I don't think there's any like crazy blowouts. I think that they're fairly close.
They're relatively close. Yeah. Like at the end of the day, like almost blowouts in the playoffs are rare when you get this far down. Like unless it's like an off night. Basketball's gotten, the quality of basketball keeps getting better and better as time goes on. They don't know when the season's going to start again, so guys are giving it their all. But like, I find, like, I'll be honest, I haven't watched a single minute of hockey since the Leafs got eliminated, which is like 6 months ago now in COVID times.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I have no idea. I don't know who's winning the Stanley Cup Finals. I have no idea what's going on, nor do I care. But I don't need to be enlightened is what I'm saying. That being said, there was a controversy in hockey this week that, like, you know, everyone was very upset about who won the Hart Trophy. I have no idea who won the Hart Trophy, nor, again, do I care, because in 5 minutes I'll forget. But apparently it was a big controversy about who won the Hart Trophy and who wins NHL awards. But I'm like, that's like winning participation awards. The NHL awards mean absolutely nothing. So please enlighten me. Who won the Hart Trophy this year?
Leon Draisaitl won it.
So that's really interesting. So the second best player on a team that couldn't get out of the playoff round or the play-in round won the Hart Trophy.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, don't get me wrong. Leon Draisaitl will be the number one player on a lot of teams in the NHL, but he's the second best player on his team and he's the most valuable player. That's really interesting. So yeah,
it's I mean, it's an interesting choice. I don't know if I see what they were doing in terms of choosing it. He was excellent all year, but it's kind of like not giving LeBron the MVP votes. What do you get, like 8 first place votes? And he was like, "All right, okay then."
Did he not LeBron have a great season? LeBron James should win MVP every year, but for the interest of parity, they don't give it to him every year.
Right, right. Yeah. And
but, I mean, the NHL doesn't have that kind of gumption. Like, generally, guys – well, I mean, let's be honest. As far as I know, the NHL Hart Trophy Award is usually based on who scores the most points. That's literally all it is.
Yeah.
So usually the Art Ross and the Hart go hand in hand, unless, like, you have a truly exceptional season as a defenseman or a goalie. But, like, it's all about, like, hey, this guy scored 124 points this year. Let's give him the Hart Trophy. Like, there's no metric. Leon Draisaitl is the ultimate one-dimensional hockey player. I don't think he's the most valuable. Most valuable scorer, sure. But, like, the Oilers got bombed out by a lottery team in the play-in round. So how good is he? How valuable is he? Like, that's my point. These awards mean nothing. Like, the NHL is a giant jerk-off at the best of times.
Like, well, I mean, I will tell you this. Outside of Major League Baseball awards, which are I don't even outside of all awards, I think individual accolades in sport are the least of most people's concern, unless they're getting some sort of like incentive for achieving it. So like, if you got an incentive for gold gloves in baseball, then yeah, you're probably going to work hard at being defensively sound. But how do you determine who gets a gold glove just other than not making errors? What if there's 18 people who qualify? What next?
Fair. I mean, gold gloves aren't MVP of the league trophies, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah. What I'm saying outside of, okay, so MVP of the league, I think, is the exception, but, and baseball really doesn't have that. I mean, they have AL MVP and NL MVP.
Yeah, I don't really, I don't find AL and, I think AL and NL MVP awards are very, very serious business. And they,
yeah.
Although it doesn't always come down to Josh Donaldson once beat Mike Trout for an MVP award, which to me is just hilarious. Even though he wasn't saying he wasn't deserving. I didn't say Donaldson. I love Donaldson. He had a good year. But the fact that anyone ever believed that Josh Donaldson was more valuable than Mike Trout says pretty much all you need to know about MVP awards. I just think it's funny that the second best player – it's like when Malkin won like 10, 12 years ago. And I was like, he's the second best player on his team. That's cute. You can't be the most valuable when you're not even the best player on your own team. That's how I feel. Like, I know that's like a – it might be considered a hottish take, but like, it's really not. If you're not the best player on your team, you're not the most valuable player.
Yeah. So, well, you're not. You can't be. If you're not carrying your team, like you said, if you're not the guy, how can you be the best?
Yeah. And if I told you right now the Edmonton Oilers had a gun to their head and they had to choose between Draisaitl and McDavid, they're putting the gun in Draisaitl's mouth. Period.
Yes. Of course they are.
Yeah.
And for our listeners who care, not for Steve, you can close your ears. Tampa's leading 2-1 over Dallas, the series.
Oh, good for them, man. I mean, I only found out Steven Stamkos was still injured in like about a week ago, so I'm doing really well with that. Who won the Stanley Cup last year again?
Didn't the Capitals win?
I rest my case. That's all.
No. No, they don't. That's
St. Louis Blues won. Either way, I got you. That's all that matters. That shows you that like hockey is like a really big league, right? That no one really cares about when it's not happening.
You are not going to get me saying that I've been watching it, because like you saying you haven't watched since the Leafs were eliminated, I also haven't been keeping up with it. There's been things that have piqued my interest more. Once the Canadians were eliminated, my focus shift to the NBA, and then the Raptors were eliminated and football started, and the Jays, who are currently playing, beating the Yankees 2-0, fingers crossed, knock on wood, are dangerously close to clinching their playoff spot tonight. And to be honest, that stuff has my interest more than any of the hockey that's been going on. And I know that might be blasphemous for hockey fans, but I just don't care. I have such like limited amount of F's to give, and I'm not giving them to hockey. I'm not right now. Speaking of those Jays, they went through a rough week. It's been ugly. Their magic number to clinch the playoffs is one. So
they're winning right now, by the way. So like the
odds are 2-0 right now. It's they were like, you know, it, I don't think they have much to worry about. I think that they should be in, but are you curious to see how this playoff format works out? Are you going to watch any of this? Obviously if the Jays are,
oh, hell yeah. I love playoff baseball and playoff football and playoff basketball. I love, like, I don't give a shit who's playing in playoff baseball. I am here for it. I vividly remember the Cubs beating the Indians. I watched all 7 games of that series on bated breath. Like I love baseball. Like, I'm going to be honest, dog days of August and regular season baseball in normal years is not something it's tough to watch unless your team's really in it. But like, as far as like playoff baseball, every moment matters so much. It's beautiful, and like everyone gives their best. Heroes are made, people fall. Like, it doesn't feel subjective. It doesn't feel like it can be as influenced by officiating like other sports do. I love it.
The thing that I've noticed about this season in particular is that coming into this, the games have already started getting more intense. We're already seeing, you know, players, obviously they've been taking it serious the whole time, but we're seeing a different intensity coming into the last, and it feels a lot more like, dare I say, normal baseball than it has earlier on when we were, you know, it's the COVID league. No, like, this feels legit. It feels nice to be in contention for sure for now.
I think that's why we're not calling it the COVID league, is the Jays are going to make the goddamn playoffs way ahead of schedule than we thought they ever would.
Yes, probably. But also, like, even you're talking about like vividly remembering things. I remember watching like the Mets playing and rooting for the Mets because they hadn't won. Like, they were like lovable losers for so long. And I remember watching, well, they are, but you know, they've got some of our former Jays. So
don't bring that up. Like, that didn't happen. We didn't trade the farm for R.A. Dickey. The Mets.
I know. But you know what? I remember watching some of the like classic, like, Mets playoff games where they were like, it was comebacks and all sorts of things. And, you know, I remember watching Houston, St. Louis when they were both in the National League before Houston was horrible cheaters. The Killer Bees, and like, you know, going against Albert Pujols, and Pujols just destroying them. But like, they fought
that Brad Ridge fastball that still hasn't landed yet.
Yeah, the like, honestly, those series are like ingrained in my mind and always will be. And I can't wait to watch playoff baseball. So go Jays. I'm very hopeful. Are you one of the evolutionists that think that this new playoff format is going to stay and Manfred's doing a good thing? Or are you the person that says that this is ruining the game, having too many teams available in the playoffs?
Well, since we didn't get much baseball this year, I don't like this format going forward for baseball. Like, if they have a full 162 game season, I feel like it's wild overkill. But in this scenario, God, this is tough. I don't want to give Manfred any credit. So, like, forgive me. I'm going to walk a slippery slope. I like what they're doing. Don't like how it was implemented. Don't like anything about this season other than the fact that it's happening. I
get a lockout here.
Yeah, I'm happy that this new format allowed the Jays to make the playoffs way ahead of schedule, so I can't be bitter about it. If we were not making the playoffs, I'd probably say this was trash. But we are, and I'm a homer, so everyone kiss my ass. I'm happy with it. I think Manfred's probably the worst commissioner in sport, well, the second worst commissioner in sports. Gary Bettman will always be the worst commissioner in sports. But
doing it the longest.
Yeah, and he's been the worst since, like, 1995. Like, Justin, often guest on the show, tells me Bettman's the man. Meanwhile, teams bleed money, and Justin's like, nope, can't get rid of them. Just can't happen. Like, you can't get rid of the Florida Panthers and the Arizona Coyotes or the Phoenix Coyotes. Like, come on, you can. The league overexpanded. I know they just took that Seattle money, but with no live gates coming anytime soon for NHL games and TV ratings being as mediocre as they are, the NHL needs to find a way to stop bleeding money and making other franchises pay for Bettman's shitty ideas. Don't get me wrong. He's had good ideas. He made Vegas. He made Seattle happen. But he also, you know, put a hockey team in Atlanta, Georgia. And I put
several in Florida.
Oh, hold on. I mean, I've buried Florida enough on this show, but he also, even though sometimes they're successful, he put a hockey team in Raleigh, North Carolina. He put a hockey team, like, you know what I mean? Like
Nashville.
Yeah, but Nashville's kind of taken off because there's nothing else in Nashville. So,
but
like,
that's a smart play. That's a smart business play.
Well, no, it really wasn't, because if that team had been, like, awful, if that team had never gotten good and they didn't have the right people there running it, like, you know, Phoenix or, like, you know, a lot of, like, Carolina is good again now, but they've only been good about maybe 8 years of their existence total. And they've been around since, what, 99, 2000? Anyway, here nor there. You took a team from Hartford, Connecticut and put it in Raleigh, North Carolina. I don't really know what else to say. Yeah. Like, it's just like Gary Bettman is a bozo. They've had one season short, two seasons shortened and one season outright canceled under lockout disputes under his reign. The league went from being a legit number three sport in North America to being Canada's little favorite dinky toy. If it wasn't for Rogers wildly overpaying for the NHL, the NHL salary cap would probably be $50 million.
Like $5.2 billion for the rights. Yeah,
and I think NBC gave like $2.1 billion for the NHL. Yeah. And like there was a point in time where I'm pretty sure the NHL was paying NBC to be on there. Like he's ruined this league. He's done everything he can to like just – the fact is the owners keep him because he got a salary. That he did do that. So giving him credit now, he got a salary cap. Although, the other hand, salary caps kill the Leafs. So fuck you, Gary Bettman. But it saved the league, but it hurts the Leafs. I'm tired of the Leafs paying for all these fail boat scrub teams. Like, I don't give a fuck about the Florida Panthers. Fold them. Like, I don't give a fuck about the Phoenix Coyotes. Fold them. Let the Leafs make all the money. Get rid of the salary cap. Like, just get rid of these dead weight teams. The Ottawa Senators, get rid of them. They don't need to exist. They can't even sell their own arena. If you can't sell an arena for a professional sporting event that only holds 18,000 people, you probably shouldn't exist. Just saying.
I'm going to say that, and I like, there are a lot of spicy takes in there, and I appreciate most of them. I don't have as big of an issue with Bettman. I don't think he's that great. I won't say that he does a great job. I will say that he does his job for the owners, which is who he represents.
Goodell does his job by the owners. Goodell is a piece of shit, but he takes care of those owners, and players always bend and break and bend over and spread cheeks for him. So Goodell is the best commissioner as far as that goes. Silver is like a little too in the players' pockets, and he there's negatives to each and every one. I can go over it and go through each one and tell you which ones are great and which ones are not. They all have their strengths and weaknesses. Bettman's done some good. A lot more good lately than he's done bad, but I can't just forget almost two decades of awfulness because he's done like five or six things.
I will say this about what you just said about letting teams die. I am 1,000,000,000% on board. If a team cannot sell out, even sell like a decent amount, like three, you know, 9/10 of your seats for a playoff game, what do you mean you can't sell out a playoff game? I don't care if it's like in an 82 game schedule on a Wednesday afternoon, you're playing some like low life team that nobody cares about. You know, Florida's in Ottawa, nobody cares. I get that. You're not going to sell that out. I will tell you this though. I have a problem when the playoffs are in and you have to put tarps over certain sections so it doesn't look empty. That's an issue. I'm sorry, you need to fold that or move it to another market that's willing to take the money and do it, but you can't do that. Anyway, I'm not going to get in on why Ottawa's a piece of shit and we should get rid of them, because they are. Same with Florida. Florida Panthers.
And Phoenix.
I know. Arizona's actually doing better now, but it took a lot of hand-holding, and I'm pretty sure the league still technically owns them, and that's ridiculous. So, speaking of things that are ridiculous, we're talking about the biggest draft busts in the NHL.
Oh, in the Bettman era, oddly enough, because he's been around that long that we can only talk about the Bettman era.
I know we didn't touch on football. I do want to touch, before we dump into it, sorry, there is one thing that piqued, I think, both of our interests in the NFL this week. The games were the games. Injuries happened like crazy. Eric Armstead called out the league for allowing people to play on the Jets' turf. So fuck you, MetLife, and your shitty turf. Get it fixed. But I will tell you this. That's where everyone got hurt, and they said it was trash. So I believe the players in this. The best story that came out of last week was Tyrod Taylor was supposed to start, and all of a sudden he had a chest injury after warmups, and everybody was kind of left like they didn't really have an explanation for it in the booth. They didn't know what had happened. And then it came out that a doctor punctured his lungs, giving him an injection for broken ribs. So he was hurt, and they were trying to make him feel better so that he could play, already hurt, which he shouldn't be, which they're covering up. And he hurt him more, so he couldn't play. So follow along if you can, the NFL logic. I'm hurt and I'm hiding it. Please give me a shot. The shot makes you more hurt. Now you really can't play. Am I missing anything here? Did we get it right?
My favorite part of the situation is the man was breaking protocol and going to play hurt. And while trying to give him painkillers to risk further injury and numbing the pain, while giving him a painkiller, they broke his fucking ribs. That's the most NFL thing of all time. And people will say, he needs to man up and play, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh my God. I mean, we got to see a rookie, so it's fine. I don't know.
Justin Herbert was excellent. And
yeah, he looked great. That kid was great. I'm glad I watched that game. So I was actually very happy for him. He kind of shoved it up my ass about rookie quarterbacks. Although the Chiefs defense couldn't stop my cat from taking a bath. So, I mean, whatever. They only put up 18 points. But
yeah. All right. So now, last week we talked about NFL busts. And NFL busts are a little different than hockey busts. Because typically in the NHL, people get... for whatever reason, opportunities to play at least some games. Typically, not always. I have an example of someone who was taken relatively high and hardly played at all. And there are also examples of guys who are taken like middle first round. So just to be clear, when we're talking about busts, we're talking about people that don't live up to, or I'm talking about people, I don't know about you, people that don't live up to where they were drafted. If you draft someone in the first five picks in the NHL, you are looking for someone who is going to help your franchise almost immediately. Maybe not first year, but typically first year, at least now. Am I wrong in thinking that? What are your, like, what were you looking at when you were looking at this draft bust in the NHL? Because there are a lot of guys who played and we're just kind of blah, but they were drafted so high that you're like, waste of a pick.
So what I define as like a draft bust was actually defined, oddly enough, by like articles we were reading earlier, but we always research these sorts of things. I think it's somebody that you think is going to be the future of your franchise. Like all bets are off. You had that awful year. You tanked. You did everything you could to get a guy, and you get that guy, and he ends up being Patrick Steffen. Or Alexander Dagg, or Nail Yakupov, or, I mean, God knows the Oilers got lots of first overall picks, and most of them were, well, whatever, it doesn't matter. But that's my idea of a bust. Like, I don't give a damn if your 23rd overall didn't work out. You know what I mean? Or even if you're 12th overall. But like, if you're a top five pick and you bust out terribly and you only play like two or three NHL games, or you're shipped off to Europe or Switzerland or something to play the rest of your career in hockey, you're a bust.
Anyone in the top 15 that doesn't have us any, like any career, I consider a bust. I look at Hugh Jessamine, who played two NHL games, and was taken in the 2003 entry draft, in between Jeff Carter and Dustin Brown, both very good players. Dion Phaneuf was taken in that draft. Brent Seabrook was taken after. Zach Parise was taken after. Like, there's guys that are okay. Like, I have no problem saying that, you know, people in the fifth round of this draft, like, is Alexei Ivanov really that important to me? No, he was taken 156th overall. That's like, at that point, you're talking about the fifth round of whatever.
You're talking about career AHLers at best, really.
Yeah. I mean, in this particular draft, Yaro Halak was a ninth round pick. He was 271st.
Who was 271st? Who?
Yaroslav Halak.
Oh, Jesus. In the 2003 draft?
Yeah. Brian Elliott.
Top 10 players in that draft.
Brian Elliott was 291st, second last pick.
And still, one probably the top 10, 15 players in that draft.
Yeah. Well, maybe. That this draft is pretty loaded. This is like, this has Fleury and Staal as your first two picks.
Yeah, and those guys are great, but I guarantee you Brian Elliott's better than maybe half the first round. Close.
I'll put him in the first round. He deserves to be in the first round. Unlike, say, the 1999 draft, which is filled with, I mean, do you want to start there at the 99 draft?
Well, my pick to the biggest draft of all time is the first overall pick in the 1999 draft. People love to pick on Alexander Dagg, but I think Patrick Steffen was by far worse than Alexander Dagg.
Well, there was a lot that happened to get this pick, is it not? Like, was this not yes. Yeah.
So,
but Vancouver.
Where did the practice come from?
Yeah. Vancouver traded that pick through Tampa because this is when Brian Burke was trying to get the Sedins together. So they traded up. Atlanta traded up to get Steffen.
Yeah, because the Canucks had this third pick, and they traded some. They traded a bunch of stuff to get the second pick.
Yes.
For the record, if you ever needed to know how bad Patrick Steffen was going to be, his hockey team that he was drafted of was the Long Beach Ice Dogs.
Yeah, I know.
Did Long Beach? Do they still exist? Like, is that league still exist? No, they went defunct in 2007. That's a shame.
Yeah. I mean,
previously had San Diego Gulls, though. So yeah, minor hockey in Southern California. Love that. Keep going.
I mean, so like Steffen had 455 career games played, which is why I always laugh when commentators are talking about guys reaching their like 100th NHL game. And I was like, it's like two seasons, guys. Like, let's pump the brakes on anointing this guy like a milestone at 100 games. Like, Patrick Steffen played 455 of them. He also didn't do anything. He has 64 goals for a number one pick. Number one overall.
He is the worst first overall in NHL history, and it's not close. His first year in the league, he scored 5 goals. Next year, he played 6 less games, scored 10 goals. Then he went to the AHL in his third season for 5 games, and they brought him back up, and he had a monstrous 59 games, 7 goals, 16 assists. Then he peaked in 2002, 2003. No, actually, he peaked in 2004 at 14 goals and 26 assists. If he was a Maple Leaf, we'd be talking about how we need to keep him for $7 million, and he's got a great promising future. Unfortunately, he was an Atlanta Hawk, or Atlanta Thrasher, sorry. And then he went to – when did he go to the Dallas Stars? His most famous career moment was the Dallas Stars, 2006, 2007. So he hung around for a while. We were giving him chances. But when he had the open netter and he was skating by and the puck skipped over his stick and went by the net and the Oilers came back the other way and scored the game-tying goal. It's not that big of a deal. People like to make a bigger deal of it than it was because the Stars ended up winning that game in overtime anyway. But it is an all-time blooper that defines that. It's more memorable than anything he did in his career, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Why did they draft him so high? I'm looking at his Long Beach Ice Dogs numbers. 5 goals, 10 assists, 15 points in 25 games. 33 games, 11 goals, 24 points, 35, 24 assists, 35 points in 33 games in Long Beach. Like,
yeah. So I think part of the issue is I'm pretty sure he's a centerman, right? No. Yeah, he's a centerman. So teams obviously build out of being centermen. He played in the Czech League for a bit as well, as a kid.
Yeah, he played for HC Sparta Praha, where he, in two seasons, played a combined 32 games and scored 2 goals, 7 assists for 9 points in two. There was never a moment this guy looked like he should be a first overall pick. I don't want to be like a dick. But, like, if you can only put up, if you can't dominate the IHL with the Long Beach Ice Dogs, then you probably don't belong being a first over. I'm pretty sure if you took 18-year-old Connor McDavid, thinking more famous athletes, and threw him on the Long Beach Ice Dogs, I'm pretty sure you would see some shocking numbers.
You'd probably see some shocking numbers if you put Connor McGregor on skates.
I mean, on June 20th, Stefan was raised to the Dallas Stars for Yaroslav Modri and Nico Kapanen in the 7th-round pick in 2006. Jesus, Dallas paid a fortune for this guy. Like, oh, my God.
I know. The other guy that's always tossed in immediately is always Alexander Daigle. You're right about Stefan being way worse. Daigle played. He just didn't live up to, like, number one overall.
The difference between Daigle and Stefan, Daigle was supposed to be like the next great hockey player. I don't remember anyone ever talking about Patrick Stefan being the next great hockey player. I think it was just a weak draft class.
Well, it was the Sedins, basically.
Yeah, like right here, like Daigle's first year, 84 games, 20 goals, 31 assists. I forgot the NHL used to be 84 games, 20 goals, 31 assists, 51 points. Autumn, and also he dominated juniors, 42 games, 110 points, 66 games. Like there was reason to believe this kid was the future. Like, you know what I mean? Like, his second season, 47 games, 16 goals, 21 assists. His third season starts to tip. But, no, like, even 96, 97, 26 goals, 25 assists, 51 points. Like, Alexander Daigle gets an unfair shake. Was he great? No. But he's no way is even in the same realm as Patrick Stefan or Nail Yakupov. Like, he's far better than those guys. And he got another go in, like, 2006 in the NHL. And 46 games, 5 goals, 23 assists, 20 points. In 2006, 13 years later, getting a second crack in the NHL, he was still better than Patrick Stefan was at his peak.
In 2003, he was on the Minnesota Wild. He played in 78 games, which is impressive considering at that point he had been around for a while. And he put up 20 goals, 31 assists, and 51 points. And I mean, if you were to tell me that you were going to get that out of, I mean, speaking as a Habs fan, a 20-goal scorer is pretty okay. It's not number one overall okay. And I think that's where he gets kind of roped into this, is that he had 660. I mean, he played 600 games in the NHL. I find it hard to believe he's a bust, but because he was taken with such high, like, praise, such high expectation, it just kind of sullied his reputation a bit more than people were interested in, for sure. I mean, it's unfortunate. You brought up someone else, and that's Neil Yakupov. And I think it's funny that you brought him up for a few reasons, because
can we talk about what happened earlier which led to this whole thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, you tell them.
I wanted to go into a thing before I told the story.
No, you tell the story. You tell the story. Well, like,
so I get a pull this afternoon, as often on Thursday afternoons, although I think we decided this topic yesterday. Either way, I was like, okay, well, I have a list of guys, but let me take a look, see if anyone jumps out of, like, all-time greatest busts. And I pulled up a 2012, like, I hate to say it, a Bleacher Report article. Like, I don't endorse Bleacher Report in any way, shape, or form. But that said, I brought it up. And it was a list in 2012. And at number three on said list was Alexander Daigle, which, again, is just written by some moron that doesn't know any better. And that's fine. That's okay. But in that article, it was 2012 and Yakupov had just been drafted first overall. And the whole article made it like, if you want to know how bad Alexander Dagg was, imagine like these guys all being better than Nail Yakupov. And folks, am I here to tell you, they were all better than Nail Yakupov by large margins. And I just thought it was so funny that like those two things synced up at the perfect time where Alexander Dagg was referenced to how impossible Nail Yakupov would be to be in that list. But Yakupov, I think, seats higher than Dagg on this list. Although when I did run the numbers, he played half as many career games as Dagg and scored half as many points. So they're about a wash, but Yakupov went to a team pretty like with already good young players around him, not a good team, but good young players around him, where poor Dagg went to an expansion franchise. So I don't know. I still think Dagg is better than Alexander Yakupov.
Dagg is better than Nail Yakupov, and he's going to be, in my opinion. I think that Yakupov is one of those people that scared off guys drafting Russians. There were a few instances where NHL teams drafted Russian players fairly high and they just refused to sign, or they came over with perceived or legitimate attitude problems. And I think Yakupov is one of those guys who just never understood the North American game he should have. He also didn't play a lot. 48 games, 63 games. Had his first like good full season, and he scored 33 points. And that was 14-15. And then he had 60 games, 40 games, and then was traded to Colorado at 58 games. And then he left for the KHL. And he hasn't been back.
He'll never be back. Unlike Alexander Dagg, no one's giving Nail Yakupov a second chance.
Yeah, I don't expect there to be many Nail Yakupov kind of supporters. No. When was he drafted? What draft? The 2012 draft? In that draft, do you see, like, when you're looking at it, are there things that you, like, when I look at drafts, I look at who's taken after and kind of compare them. There are some people in this draft that are also, I think, worthy of that bus, because this draft is not great.
The 95 draft is probably worse. So 95 to 99 is the
But like Griffin Reinhart at 4.
Yeah.
He has 37 career games played in the NHL.
That's a bust.
2 assists, 2 points. And I don't remember if he was hurt. He might have been, but I believe.
Can you even Google him? The question is, was he bad enough that you can't even Google him? Griffin Reinhart, Canadian hockey player. Here we go.
Just to be clear, Morgan Riley was drafted after Reinhart and has 517 career games and is a significantly better player. I bust the balls of Leaf fans and the Leafs a lot, but Riley's a good player, you know.
Like, he's much better than Griffin Reinhart or Nail Yakupov.
I mean, even Hampus Lindholm, who's a great story right now, just coming back from a little bit of cancer treatment. Matt Dumba, better than Reinhart. These are all defensemen. This is the defenseman drafted in order of this draft. So Nail Yakupov, forward, goes first. Ryan Murray, defenseman. Played 350 games in the NHL almost. Almost had as many points as Yakupov. He's out. Last season was 19. Well, no, last season's 19-20. Still playing. So Galchenyuk, forward. Still playing somehow. I'm not entirely sure how. He's had all sorts of issues everywhere he goes. Griffin Reinhart, defenseman. Bust. And then it goes Riley, Hampus Lindholm, Matt Dumba, and then Derek Pouliot. Derek Pouliot's only got 200 games. And then Jacob Trouba. And then Slater Kokek, who's, I don't know who you are. Yeah, he's got 149 games. But that's your 10th overall pick. And then you're starting to get into the territory that you mentioned, where it's like you're not looking at, you're looking at more of a lottery pick than you are that real generational game change. Like, are you really picking at 10 thinking you're getting the next Sidney Crosby? I don't think so. I don't know. You were talking about the 95 draft. Do you want to talk about 95 being the maybe the worst draft ever?
I think 1995 is the worst draft year ever for all sports cumulatively. But we're going there. So here's the list. Brian Berard, eye injury, we'll let that go. Wade Redden, okay for a few years. Notorious Coke Fiend, whatever. Aki Pettiberg, maybe underrated, but I don't know if he's a third overall. Number four, Chad Kilger. Number five, Damon Lankow. Number six, Steve Kelly. Number seven, Shane Doan, legit. Number eight, Terry Ryan. Number nine, Kyle McLaren. Number 10, Radek Dvorak. Number 11, Jerome Iginla. Cool, cool. Number 12, I don't know how to say this, Timu Rijavari. Ah, who cares? Jean-Sebastien Jaguar, 13, Jay McKee, Jeff Ware, Marty Baron, Brad Church, Peter Sikora, Dmitry Nabokov, Dennis Gauthier, Sean Brown, Brian Boucher, Mika Ilomo, Alexei Morozov, Mark Denis, and Maxim Kuznetsov. There's some great fun stuff in this draft. There's definitely great players, but there's a whole lot of bad.
Oh, so man. Damon Lankow played 1,000 games in the NHL.
Yeah, but getting me wrong, not saying he wasn't.
No. You're saying at fifth overall, Damon Lankow is not what you were looking for.
Especially when you get drafted out of Shane Doan, Jerome Iginla, Jaguar, you know,
Peter Sikora,
Radek Dvorak even was a better player, I think, at some points in his career. But like you go to round two, like. This draft just doesn't, like, you know, usually we find, like, gems in later rounds. I don't think you find that in this draft. I don't. No, Alan McCauley is one of the best players in this draft, and he's taken in the fourth round.
All right, Sandy Caffrey, Mark Zimmer. This is the top five point getters of this draft. So Jerome Iginla, number one, not surprised.
Yeah.
1,300 points, right? He was drafted in the first round, 11th overall. Shane Doan, number two, 972 points, seventh overall in the first round. Peter Sikora is number three at 18th overall with 721 points. And in the fourth round, the Rangers took Mark Savard, the fourth highest point getter on this list, 706 points.
Yeah.
And then the fifth highest is Damon Lankow.
What? More
than Radek Dvorak, more than Michael Hanzus, who went in the fourth round. it's ugly. It's an ugly draft. You're not seeing, I'm telling you right now, the first overall pick is like 12th or 13th most points, and it's 323.
Like, I mean, I'll give him like
a pass.
Yeah. But I didn't want to throw the burial on Berard. I would say Wade Redden.
Wade Redden is not far up the list either. 457 points. I know he's a defenseman, but
you know. Yeah, but he was a highly paid, overvalued, cokehead-y, put the puck in his own net defenseman.
Yes. Yeah.
We don't even accept around the cokehead-y thing, but I have stories, but I won't tell them here.
Yeah. It's an awful draft. You were mentioning that you think it's the worst draft for.
I think 1995 as a whole. For sports drafts, like I know this is all about the NHL, but like just to really give you a synopsis real quick, NBA. I'll go to the 1995 NBA draft. I asked you earlier who's the number one overall pick in the 95 NBA draft. Like, I have no idea. I'm like, okay, well, let me tell you, it's Joe Smith. And you looked at me with a blank stare, like, who the hell is Joe Smith? And I'm like, exactly. So the NBA draft in 1995: Joe Smith, Antonio McDyess, Jerry Stackhouse, Rasheed Wallace, Kevin Garnett, Bryant Reeves, Damon Sotomayor, Sean Respert, Ed O'Bannon, Kirk Thomas, Gary Trent, Cherokee Parks, Corliss Williamson, Eric Williams, Brent Berry, Alan Henderson, Bob Serra, Theo Ratliff. Theo Ratliff, one of the best players in this draft. Randolph Childress, Jason Caffey, Michael Finley, again, one of the best players in this draft. George Zadek, Travis Best, Lauren Mayer, David Vaughn, Cheryl Ford, Mario Bennett, Greg Ostertag, Corey Alexander, Lou Rowe. So that's the first round. Lou Rowe was actually the second round. So that's ego. There's not a whole lot of super duper stars in that draft. Let's go to the NFL 1995 NFL draft. Ready? Here we go. We will leave baseball because I don't feel baseball drafts fair. 95 NFL draft. Number one overall, Kajana Carter. Number two, Tony Bozzelli. Number three, Stephen Nair. Fair. Number four, Michael Westbrook. No idea who that is. Number five, Kerry Collins. Number six, Kevin Carter. Number seven, Mike Mamula. Number eight, one of the better players in this draft, Joey Galloway. Number nine, someone decided Kyle Brady was better than number 10, J.J. Stokes. Number 11, Derek Alexander. Or number 12, Warren Sapp. Just remember, guys, at one point in time, your team thought Mike Mimula was going to be better than Warren Sapp. And you guys being Eagles fans. By the way, they got that pick from Tampa Bay. They traded with Tampa Bay to not get Warren Sapp, but to get Mike Mimula. Just want to point that out. Mark Fields, Reuben Brown, Ellis Johnson, Hugh Douglas, Tyrone Wheatley, Napoleon Kaufman, James Stewart, Luther Elias, Rashawn Salaam, Tyrone Poole, Ty Logg was 23rd overall. The second best player in this draft, actually, behind Warren Sapp. Corey Stinger, Billy Milner, Devin Bush Sr., Mark Bruner, Derek Brooks, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, probably now the best player in this draft other than Warren Sapp, Blake Brockmeyer, and Craig Powell. I say a couple of these guys are good, but the majority of this draft is flaming trash. This is that the I won't do the MLB draft, but you're noticing a trend that 1995 was just a 1999 is also a bad draft year for most sports. It's not 95 and 99 are two really close years, but I think 95 gets the edge because the first overall pick in all three are basically busts. Yeah. Sean Carter's a bust in the NFL, Joe Smith's a bust in the NBA, and Brian Berard, I'm sorry, I know you went blind in the eye and it wasn't your fault, but you weren't that great anyway, was a bust in the NHL. So the top three picks in every draft are a – I'm sure we could go back through multiple years and find this, but like, man.
You already mentioned the 99 drafts. I just want to bring you to the 1998 draft, which had a lot of really great people in the NHL, but it also had some like – there are some busts kind of littered amongst it. Vincent LeCavalier was the first overall pick and probably a great one. That's a good – first overall.
Yeah, that guy is not a bust.
David Legwand went second overall. That's also pretty good.
I don't know if he's a second overall pick, though. Like, don't get me wrong, David Legwand's a pretty good player, but if you've gotten David Legwand like 18th or 19th overall, especially when 22nd overall is Simone Gagné, who's better than David Legwand, I'm not apologizing.
Well, yeah, I'll do that in a second. I just wanted to get to Rico Fada at 6 for Calgary, who only played 200.
How is Rico Fada?
That's a great question. He had 63 career points.
Congratulations to Rico Fada. I'm sure glad that the Calgary Flames selected him instead of Alex Tanguay, Simone Gagné, or Scott Gomez, or no.
Jeff Hirema? Hirema? Played 32 games. He was drafted by Carolina at 11. And I know we're getting like down there, but at 11, based on everybody else that we're seeing, 11, that's the best guy you thought. Robin Regier got drafted 19th overall, was a way better player. You could have been better off with Martin Schooler or Dmitry Kalinin.
In all fairness, other than LeCavalier, you could probably say Robin Regier is the second best player drafted to the point he's at.
Yeah, I mean, the second best player in this draft is actually another Tampa Bay Lightning. It's Brad Richards.
He's in the second round, isn't he?
Third round, 64th overall.
Yeah, Brad Richards. Actually, I think the second round might be better than the first round for as far as like Mike Fisher,
Mike Ribeiro. And this is one of those notorious, the third best player in this draft point-wise is actually Datsyuk, who went 171st overall in the sixth round. I mean, Tanguay went 12th, Ribeiro went 45th, and say what you want about Mike Ribeiro, 793 points.
I'm nothing to say about Mike Ribeiro. I think he's fine.
Scott Gomez went 27th overall. Simone Gagné at 22nd. Brian Gionta at 82nd, third round. Mike Fisher went the 44th in the second round. Markov was drafted this round in the sixth round as well.
Andre Markov?
Yeah.
In the sixth round?
Sixth round at 162nd overall by Montreal.
That is... he was extraordinary. So like him in the sixth round, sorry, the fact that he got drafted 100 picks behind Brian Allen blows my mind. But you could tell back then that teams just drafted Canadian hockey players because they just assumed the key to the Canada was Canada having Canadian guys. I'm double. Yeah. Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Like there's a point, a stretch here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 in a row were Canadians. Three of the first four were Canadian. Then the fifth pick was Russian. Then the next three could aid in. Antropov. Anyway, I'm getting on from the 1997 NHL draft. There's a lot of busts everywhere, man. NHL draft busts is very easy to do. It's just redefining who your favorite is.
Yeah.
The 97 NHL draft. Shit. Sorry.
The 97 draft?
Yeah. Thornton, Marlowe, Jokinen, Luongo, Brewer, Daniel Paul Mara, Sergei Samsonov, Nick Boynton, Brad Ferentz, Jason Ward, Marian Hossa, Daniel Cleary. There's not a lot of busts in that first 10. Like Paul Mara or Daniel Tkachuk's only bust I can see. But like all those guys are pretty good at each other.
Someone that we didn't mention, I think he was in the 99 draft, actually, which is not ironic. Hold on, I got to pull it up and make sure I'm in the right draft that I'm thinking about. Was it 99 or was it 2003? When did Rick DiPietro get drafted?
Rick DiPietro was the first overall 2000.
2000 draft, okay. Also, not a great pick. Goalies are one of those things where if you're taking a goalie, so there's a few that that were on a list that I saw. DiPietro was one of them. They also talk about the Jack Campbell, who got drafted by the Kings late. Al Montoya got drafted in 2004 at sixth overall. Sixth for Al Montoya,
dude. I'm
pretty sure he's out of there.
We're not going to talk about this guy, so I'm going to go back to the 1996 draft on you real fast. Andre Zuzan went second overall in the 96 draft. Jean-Pierre Dumont, Alexander Volchkov, Rick Jackman, Boyd Devereaux, Eric. This draft might be the cake taker, dude. The number one first overall pick is Chris Phillips, which is fantastic. But the rest of this draft, I have no – and I watched hockey very religiously back then. I have no idea who any of these guys are. Marco Sturm went 21st. Daniel Briere went 24th. Honestly, Daniel Briere is the best player of this draft, and he went at the end of the first round.
Yeah, that's kind of ridiculous.
This draft is way worse. 95 and 99 have nothing on this. Who the hell is Marty Riesner?
I know Marty Riesner. I don't know why I know Marty Riesner, but I do.
Okay. But how about Matthew Descote? You know it's bad when his Wikipedia photo is him in an AHL All-Star jersey.
Yeah, so we're looking at So the best player in this draft in terms of points is actually Matt Cullen, who had 731 points. Briere is second. Chara is actually probably one of the best players in this draft, who went in the third round, 56th overall. And is still playing 1,500 games.
Oh, Chara?
Chara went third round, 56th overall to the Islanders in this draft. This is also the Thomas Caberle draft. Toronto grabbed him in the eighth round.
He went eighth round, you said?
Yeah. Caberle went in the eighth round. That was when Toronto used to draft well. Only in the late rounds, though. Just throwing that out there.
Crazy. I can't believe I thought he was like a second round, first round pick. I had no idea he was an eighth rounder.
He was an eighth round. He went 204th overall that year.
Wild. That blows my
mind. He's the fifth best point scorer in this draft. And I only go by points because I feel like games played is also important. He's also sixth, I think, in games played. Derek Morris has more games. Chris Phillips, like you said, Dennis Zubras is on here. He went 15th overall, but the two guys that played the longest are Chara and Matt Cullen. Cullen was in the second round. Chara's in the third. They both have 1,500 career games. Pretty sure Cullen ended his career with the Pens on those cup runs. So he did all right. I don't classify him as a bust. He's also a second rounder. Ultimately, if you're taking someone again in like 12th overall, and I mentioned Hugh Jessamine, who played two career NHL games, drafted 12th overall, that's rough. That's a rough pick. You've done something wrong. Do you think that in the NHL, we've mentioned MLB before, how it's not really just because you can draft a guy in Major League Baseball and not see him for 5 years, and then he shows up and you forget that you drafted him. But that's what's supposed to happen. I mean, how long was Vlad Jr. in the Jays system? I mean, he's been there for... Well, Vlad Jr. was 16 when they signed...
It's for 4 years he was in the system. Yeah. He's 21, 22 now, I think it is.
Yeah. So he's been around for a while. in hockey, in that first, I guess, 10 picks, really, you're looking at someone that you're expecting or hoping is going to make the jump to your big league team that year. You're hoping they make it out of camp. Some people need time to go back and figure it out. Goalies are usually a rare case for this, but forwards, and in particular centermen, wingers, guys that are scorers, are asked to come up and really produce early. Do you think that your like central scouting has some like the, is this where you're seeing the misses? Are you seeing guys just evaluating players bad? Or do you think that this is like a hype driven thing where someone scores really well at junior and it's just different than the NHL, like in the NFL when guys are like, oh, he's really good in college, but then he can't do shit in the NFL.
I think I basically gave my opinion on this in the NFL version. And I'll give the other thing is I think guys are rock stars their whole lives and play in like as big fish in little ponds. And a lot of times guys get to the show where everyone was a rock star their entire lives and some adjust and are just true rock stars. And some of them are just AC/DC cover bands and dive bars. And I think that's really what you see is that, like, I don't know if Griffin Reinhart was a bad hockey player or if he was fairly labeled a bust, but he was probably used to being a big Western Canadian boy that could like really dominate small people that were, he was playing with, and got to the NHL and realized he couldn't do any of those things and couldn't adapt his game. Sidney Crosby was a no effing doubter the entire time he played junior, from the time he was a kid all the way to the day when he was drafted. We never thought he was going to be a bust, and he came out and he hit the ground running. But there's guys that have been drafted and you're like, another one, like, I don't know if it counts as a bust, but I remember thinking Ryan Nugent Hopkins probably wasn't a legit first overall pick in better
years. Well, he's better now, but
I'm not picking on Ryan Nugent. I don't want to call him a bust either. But like, I didn't know who Nail Yakupov was when he got drafted first overall, and I still gave a mild fuck about hockey when he was drafted. But like I pointed out, Patrick Stephan was putting up mediocre numbers with the Long Beach Ice Dogs. Rest in peace, Long Beach Ice Dogs. They went into business in 2007. They were originally the San Diego Gulls, apparently, so they upgraded to Long Beach Dogs. But anyway, yeah, like you could see that coming. Like, dude, I'm telling you right now, like the NHL, like I always believe that scene in Moneyball where like he has an unattractive girlfriend, shows low confidence, don't pick him, was a real thing going across the board in all sports. And I feel like hockey would be like, you know what? He didn't wear a poppy on Remembrance Day. Don't want him. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I feel like hockey was in the 90s when we're picking out a lot of these guys. Like, who the hell is Matt Higgins?
So Griffin Reinhart was actually they talked about he was a huge defenseman that never played to his size. He was never, like, using his grit or size to do it. So, I always look at people and they go, you know, in baseball when you draft a guy, you say, oh, he's got the tools. He just needs, like, he needs refinement, needs to be taught how to use them. I feel like in hockey, they try to sometimes take that same perspective. They go, this guy's really raw. What can I do with him? Except in hockey, it's not that forgiving. It's not easy to say, oh, he's a really good, like, he's not a good skater. Let's fix that. That takes a lot of work. Like, you're correcting habits that have been in place since they were, you know, in peewee. We're talking about like grassroots level shit that's been embedded in their head. And you're saying that you're going to draft him on a, like, you know, on a we can change him kind of attitude. And I find that hilarious in a lot of ways. But other than that, I look at the way people draft and overall. There's people that have systems that are known for it. Detroit is known for having an excellent scouting program. They take time. They do a lot of digging in places where other people don't dig. They go over to the Russian leagues. They go over to Europe and they like built a relationship over there and they're known for it. And you know, when, I mean, and this is back, I don't know if it's the same now, but this is like, you know, Fedorov and those guys are like, that's what you were looking for. And now we see more can't miss guys. I remember seeing McKinnon on the ice here locally and thinking he's just bigger and faster than everybody on the ice. He's going to be fine. Like there's
that could have went either way though. No. Like what you just said could go either way. He's just bigger and faster than everybody on the ice. When you saw locally, if he didn't have the mindset to adjust and play amongst bigger and faster people, he could have easily been a bust, but I think he was one of those guys who was just mentally ready to put the work in to be better. He couldn't be Nathan McKinnon that won in the Memorial Cup. He had to evolve.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of guys don't evolve.
Yeah. Speaking of the big fish in Little Pond, I'm going to get us out on this here, unless you have a bust that you're just dying to get off your chest.
Go ahead.
There's actually a current lawsuit in place. And I don't know if I mentioned this last week or not, so stop me if I have, because I had horrible memory right now. But there is a guy suing the NHL and the CHL umbrella. So all of the leagues underneath the Canadian Hockey League. So the OHL, QMJHL, et cetera, et cetera. Because they won't, or they are more like a prison than they are a place to allow opportunity. And the reason he's suing is because he spent his entire career playing in Canadian hockey leagues and didn't get drafted to the NHL. And he had a what am I supposed to do now moment and decided that this is the way he's going to go. Now, I will say this. If you go to Europe, you can negotiate a contract and you can play in the European leagues as soon as you turn 18 years old and you're legally allowed to work, like to play, because they're men there. They play in a men's league. It's not a kids league. In junior hockey, you're playing 16 to, I think, 20 something in the Canadian leagues, and they get a stipend and they get like room and board and education paid for, but you're not paid like a real living wage, so to speak. The point is, this guy here has decided that he thinks it's best to sue the league because he thinks that it is more like an internment camp. He called it prison or work labor.
It kind of is. They don't pay them very much. They pay them, but they pay them very little.
They give them a stipend. It's not a salary. It's a stipend. You get like $200 allowance per week or something like that.
Meanwhile, they sell 10,000 seat arenas with your play. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
I know that you are typically on the sides of the players. I just wanted to get your opinion on this. I think it's kind of personally, I call it malarkey. I think that
it is malarkey.
This sounds like a guy who was a big fish in a little pond and was told he was so great his whole life, and doesn't sound like the people that get drafted typically do the work to get drafted, and whether they're great or good or, you know, need work or whatever they are, they're typically putting in enough effort to get drafted. And this to me sounds like it reeks of a guy who didn't put in the effort, didn't get drafted, probably had bad meetings. He probably put in the old Ryan Leaf meetings. Where he's like, where's the parties? I think it's ridiculous. Big fish, little pond symptom is what it sounds like to me. What were your thoughts about all? I mean, I just rambled for like 25 minutes, it feels like. So what do you
think? You don't want me to 25 minutes, but you basically ran it all down for me. So what are my thoughts? I'm just hearing about this right now. And you can't sue a league because you didn't make it. I do feel that NCAA college athletes that were like primed to be like highly recruited, getting injured in college, costing them careers for $0, are entitled to lawsuits. Unfortunately for the CHL, is you can get drafted by going somewhere else, as NCAA athletes often couldn't, especially in football. So, and that's where the injuries mostly happen. So he could have easily went to Europe or could have went somewhere else to earn money, and he probably still could get a job playing hockey in Europe. So his logic is flawed. He's an idiot, and hopefully he loses his lawsuit, because you chose to play in the CHL, dude. I'm sure you could have went to Switzerland and made tons of money. If you're a hockey player who's played in the lockout year in Switzerland, and how much they loved it, because it was amazing.
While we were doing research for this episode, I actually looked up average salaries of hockey leagues, and the KHL pays between $100,000 and $1.2 million. That's the like average. That's the not the average. That's the like range of salaries. But the Swiss league was surprising. It was like 80k euro to like 250,000 euro tax free.
Yeah, and you live in Switzerland, which is like one of the most beautiful countries on earth.
Yeah. So shout out Switzerland and your Swiss league.
I'm pretty sure it was Rick Nash that said it was probably like if the money wasn't so good in the NHL, he would have just stayed in the Swiss league. That's how much he loved it there.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some bad leagues out there, but like, you know,
the NHL. Anyway,
you make like 30,000 euro playing in the UK league or 20,000 or something.
30,000
like
euro to play hockey is not a bad gig.
No, it's not. And I will stand by my.
I'm pretty sure you could probably pay a lot of NHLers from my childhood cases of beer to play, and they would have.
Oh, man. Okay, Steve, where can the people find you? Where can they let you know about their draft bust and they can, you know, razz on you for picking Neil Yakupov?
Fuck Neil Yakupov. Anyway, you can find me at SteveSteel23, which is going to change from Mr. Pumpkin Spice to Fuck Neil Yakupov right now, probably. Same thing on Instagram at SteveSteel23. I don't really post much about sports on Instagram, but if you want, you can go and you can scroll down the videos and watch me cry when the Raptors knocked up the Milwaukee Bucks because that happened. But yeah, no, SteveSteel23, both, and soon to be Mr. at Fuck Neil Yakupov.
Fantastic. At Armchair Comment 2, at Armchair Commentary. Come check us out. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
And that does it for this week's episode of the Armchair Commentary. I'd like to thank you for taking the time in your day to give us a listen. We appreciate each and every one of you that do so. Again, if you haven't followed us on social media, at SteveSteel23, at Armchair Comment 2, at Armchair Commentary. And also, if you can make sure to hit that subscribe button, you'll never miss the latest episode of Armchair Commentary. It has been an interesting week in sports. Can't wait to do it again next week. Thanks for listening.